Welcome to the Everyman Sports Podcast, the show for fans, by fans. No former pros, no so-called experts, just real passionate fans. From outside on a porch to inside a living room, in the parking lot of a stadium to the dining room table, friends and families chat about their teams, their games, and what makes them cheer. This is Everyman Sports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Everyman Sports. My name is Chad. I'm the owner-operator of this podcast. Our number is 626-427-7678. That's 626-427-7678. And we are also available on Twitter at Everyman Sports. With me this week is my dad. How are you doing, Dad?
I'm doing grand.
And with us again is also Alex. How are you, Alex?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent, 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 wonderful. Well, here we are. We're going to be reviewing the championship games. We're not going to preview the Super Bowl this week because you're going to get 2 weeks of that and you're going to be sick of it, so we'll save that for next week's. So right now we're just going to focus on reviewing this past week games, and we had one really good game and one very lopsided game. So I don't know, where should we start?
We'll start with the first game.
Let's start with the first game, Patriots versus the Broncos, and Peyton Manning overcomes Belichick and Brady for the third straight time in the playoffs. They're 3-1 in the playoffs. 3-1 in championship games. Manning has bested the Patriots and Belichick and Brady. Overall in the playoffs, Manning has the edge 3-2.
But overall lifetime.
Overall lifetime, Brady has it regular season.
11-6.
11-6. But
do you really rate like the lifetime head to head stats much, given how played?
Not all, well, but it's been bandied about.
Well, yeah. I think in baseball you do. I mean,
yes. Well, it's hard. Know,
top pitchers facing each other week to week.
Football is the only sport where the offense doesn't play defense. Because in hockey, you know your offense and defense. Basketball, right. Same thing. Baseball, you know, aside from the DH and the AL pitchers, like either you bat and you play in the field. Football, it's specialized. You're either on the offense or the defense, and very rarely are you on both. So technically it's Manning versus Belichick. And in that case, Belichick does have the edge. And in the playoffs, Manning has the edge over Belichick. But, you know, it's a star-driven league. You focus on the skill position players, quarterback, running back, wide receiver. And this is a case of that. So Peyton Manning wins. Not a lot of people thought they could. Throughout the playoffs this season, you see a team 1 week. You think one way of them, and pretty much only one way of them, and then they come back the following week, and
they go with the last thing you saw.
Yeah, well, everybody does that. I'll bring up the Kansas City Chiefs again. 38-0 over the Texans. Wow, the Chiefs look amazing. 11 straight games. Hey, they have a really good shot to beat the Patriots. They go, and wow, Andy Reid is a bad coach. Alex Smith is not a great quarterback. But after that game, everybody said, wow, the Patriots, of all the four teams left, they look like they can not only beat the Broncos, but really have look like they could beat even the Panthers or the Cardinals.
But that's Patriots and Patriots.
Right. And then lo and behold, the same theme with the Broncos. Wow, they barely escaped the Steelers. If it wasn't for that one fumble, they would have lost. Oh, Manning didn't challenge. He's got a bad arm. Those bad passes. He's a bad quarterback. Bring in Osweiler. And then lo and behold, the following week, wow, the Broncos' defense is amazing. Peyton can still throw it. How dare we say that he should have been benched? Yada, yada, yada.
The one thing you always say with the Patriots is even if they're not the best team, you just assume there's like a coaching edge. So you'd be like, well, their defense isn't great, but you assume Belichick is going to come up with something.
Right, because
their offense isn't great, but you assume they're going to be able to work out a defense.
Right, because Edelman's healthy, and Amendola, and Gronkowski's back, and this person's available.
No running game.
No running game at all.
And they didn't tire.
No, and the Broncos said, all right, you can try to run it.
Mile high.
Yes, I mean, Gronkowski had to get oxygen, and you kept on seeing him getting rubbed down.
That was the weird thing watching it, because you were like, I said, Gronkowski looks to be contained, and then they show up the stat, and he's got like 9 catches for 150 yards and a touchdown. I don't feel like I've been seeing him a lot.
But a lot of that came in the fourth quarter, too.
On the sideline, he looks like Klitschko.
Just a that is whole a mountain of beef.
He was telling Brady, I go this way, you go that way.
Yeah, it really is. It's just like, I run the route, you throw, yes.
finest Russian.
Well, Gronkowski. it's typical Gronk. But yeah, so Gronkowski was contained. They showed graphics where he basically covered three guys in zone.
Right. And for his touchdown, he was still double covered and yes, still got him the ball.
But the fact that DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller
got to
Brady on four man rushes. They said, fine, we're going to play. We're not going to give up the big throw.
They're covering too.
They dared them to run it, and they couldn't run it.
Well, it was just the edge rush was so fast. Like the
Von Miller got there. He was in the backfield before you blinked an eye.
But what interests me, why didn't they use Steven Jackson to chip these guys? They have a big back.
Well, there's
he was not helping.
No. Well, obviously, that's why he was sitting on a couch.
Waiting for the call.
Right. Now, if you want to blame anybody on the Patriots offense, aside from the offensive line, which Belichick and everybody else did, because they fired their offensive line coach, Dave Guglielmo.
Right, because he couldn't suit up.
Right, because Brantley, you know, blame a guy who had to pretty much create 40 different line combinations during the season. Nope, you're the reason we lost. But they had James Whiteout line up.
Whiteout?
No.
That's a good one.
That is good. James White, as a wide receiver, line up as a wide receiver on a linebacker. I forget who.
Right.
But they were like, okay, well, that's the matchup we want to exploit. And Brady overthrew him, or White just kept on dropping the passes. So there was no relief. I mean, even though the score was close, and boy,
it's hard to win a quarterback when he's on his back.
Yes, it's very hard. But, I mean, he threw the ball 50-plus times, and you like to point out stat.
Like 56 times I saw. So, I mean, if you're throwing over 50 in regulation, it's not a good chance you're winning. And it usually means you trail.
And they were trailing, and a missed extra point turned out to be the big difference in the game. Of course,
shocking.
Of course, here's a guy, Steven Gostkowski. Gostkowski, because you have to pronounce the T, I think. Gostkowski made an insane number, 535.
06 or whatever the last.
His rookie year. His last miss was his rookie year against the Tennessee Titans.
Right. Like 2005.
Yeah, in the beginning of the season. And he misses a extra point.
Yeah.
Which was the difference in the game, because at the end of the game, Patriots score the touchdown, and they have to go for two to tie the game.
Well, that's because they went for fourth down and missed it when they could have kicked a field goal.
Right, and that's a lot of things were talked about of missed opportunities for the Patriots. Patriots twice in the fourth quarter got down in deep into they got into the red zone basically,
right.
And they had a fourth and one. That they decided to go for instead of kick the field goal, which got blown up. They did a lateral to Edelman, and he was two yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he got tackled. So that one was given up. And then there was one later where, again, it was fourth. I think that was fourth and five, I think, but that was 2 minutes left. So you got to figure that out.
That was after the 40-yard pass to Gronk?
Yes, that was a big pass.
That was amazing,
to Gronk.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, down the sideline, and he was wide open. But as somebody who does not like the Patriots, I just kept on telling myself there's no way they can take the lead if they score a touchdown with those seconds taken. The worst they could tie.
But what about the betting line? Were you concerned about overtime?
A little bit.
Six-point play?
I did have...
Or you thought Belichick would give them the ball?
No, he would not be doing that again. no, I had the under, and I hit it. Had they scored a touchdown...
You hit it. You're alive.
The only way I would have... covered with the under was if it went into overtime that it was a field goal game, no touchdown scored.
Right. Well, that's the problem with the under.
Yeah,
the
it's
over
tough.
You can root right to
it's
the
tough.
Very end, but the under there comes a time when the door slams.
But I noticed one thing. Well, first of all, Peyton Manning did play really well. He found the fountain of youth with a former Colt, Owen Daniels. I believe was he a former Colt? I know he's a former Raven.
Does he look like he's trying to put something extra on the ball? Does he kind of over?
Yeah, of course he does. He's throwing it with his lower body basically, so he's really got to wind up because the arm's not there.
How about when he took off running?
That was a big run.
Yeah,
and then the sideline shout of the one guy, "Ooh, look at him go!" And the other one's like, "Yes, he did it. That's my boy."
Recently in the combines, I think Brady ran a 5-4-8 or okay. something like that.
Yeah. Well, then they showed, they did an interesting
and
thing.
I think Peyton ran a 4-8-8.
Oh, wow.
Well, they, in the game stats, they both got up to a 17, shocking 17 miles an hour.
Yeah, that was interesting. CBS broadcast on the top part of the screen, they had the miles per hour of like, the runners. Yeah. And Manning had 17 miles
an
hour.
Well, how fast would you be running with these guys chasing you?
I'd probably hit 20 miles an hour.
I'm not going to lie, my 40 time is not.
But like to put that into perspective, like I think the top runner the last couple of years has been Chris Johnson, CJ2K. He ran like something like 20 miles an hour. That was when he was with the Titans and a little bit younger. But yeah, he would get up to like 20 miles an hour. And you'll see videos. I remember Chad Johnson was trying to get back into the league, and he wanted to show like how he's still
broke.
Strong. Broke, yes.
That's the only reason he's back.
How he's still strong athletically, and he had the thing where he was with his trainers and everybody, but he set up a treadmill and set it to 20 miles an hour, and he was able to do
when
that
I do
for
that,
about 5 seconds.
Flying off the other
well, not him. He was able to do it where they did the thing, you step on it, and you kind of like use your foot to like gain to get the idea of how fast you have to, and then boom, 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 and he's running for about 5 seconds flat, and then he jumps right off to show like, hey, he can still
he's
run
agile.
That fast. Yeah.
Well,
so,
in a league of physical freaks, I mean, you know, it doesn't surprise me what any of these guys do.
No, not at all. Yeah, so a big game by Brady and that defense, a big game by Brady, big game by Manning. That defense of the Broncos was unbelievable. So
they knew what they were doing.
That's right. That Wade Phillips said, run the ball. We dare you to run the ball. They tried. They failed.
Right.
And they sent four
they
man.
Haven't been running the ball. Either.
No, of course not. So they said, look, we're going to triple. They triple teamed Gronk. And they said, all right, we'll let James White be on the outside against one of our linebackers. Right. You can exploit that matchup. And they didn't.
Right.
So kudos to Wade. I mean, look, Wade Phillips is successful everywhere he goes as a defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Head coach.
One of the best ever?
You would have to say so. I mean, everywhere he's gone has been strong defensively. But just he's one of those guys who can't be a head coach.
Right.
If he focuses on as a coordinator, great.
So he can stop progress better than he can make progress.
Well, yes. I think that's true.
I'm good at that, too.
So Peyton Manning on his way to the Super Bowl, and good for him. And this is probably going to be the last one.
Mm.
I did see that. Remember when the Ravens and the Patriots played their last AFC Championship game a couple years ago? It was the year following the missed kick by who was that? Stover, Matt Stover, or am I thinking way back when? So they had up a billboard, you know, Ray's retirement party a week before the game. You know, countdown to Ray's retirement party, and that blew up in their face. Some
Ray
fans
Lewis?
Bought that. Oh yeah. The fans bought that billboard in the countdown to Ray's retirement party, and that blew up in their face because Ray Lewis on the
Did
Ravens.
Did they find that white suit yet?
No, not yet. So then I saw on the internet going around was an invitation card, a save the date card for Peyton's retirement party. You know, save the date.
What is that? February 8th?
It was for this past game. It's like location.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
RSVP
yeah, yeah.
to this guy, and once again. It blows up in their face, so, you know.
Couldn't happen to a nicer team.
Couldn't happen nicer team. Nicer guy. But the Broncos, they're one of those teams that always end up, amazingly, they have so many Super Bowl appearances. I think they're 8.
7. This will be it's 8.
Okay, so this is their 8th. I think that matches New England, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and I think that's it. Maybe the Niners, I think. So Broncos in the Super Bowl again. And then in the NFC, the game was over by halftime, I think. The Panthers beat up soundly on the Arizona Cardinals.
You know, I never thought the fix could be in and be obvious, but it sure looked it.
Yeah?
Look at the Cardinal quarterback.
Carson Palmer is not good
in
a big game.
He didn't want to be there.
Carson Palmer is a regular season quarterback.
Yeah,
he is not a postseason quarterback.
He's not ready for prime time.
Which is amazing because he's, what, 35?
Yeah, it's over.
And this is a guy who played at USC when it was Pete Carroll's Trojans, you know,
right.
when they were winning three straight.
Right.
What we know is two, I think it was two straight, but one got abdicated. But so, I mean, this is the, you know, Carson Palmer, he's not, it's not like a a big stage should be scary to him. He didn't play at a small college, but Carson Palmer is not a good...
Was it true that he asked the coach Arians to...
I heard this, yeah, that he asked, he said to Bruce Arians, he said, I need you to call the, can you call more conservative play calls? Like, don't go, I don't want to do anything too crazy. And Arians came
out. Me up.
Arians came out and said, the head coach comes out and rats out his quarterback, good. Saying he doesn't want to, look, everybody loves Arians' straightforward, no-nonsense style.
Yeah.
But this
is
this
it good for the team?
Well, it's I'll tell you who is not good for us, Carson Palmer. You can tell that this is a big fish.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it is. He's a small fish in a big pond.
Nothing developed.
So now he can say he won one playoff game, but he lost three very, very convincingly. Although one he blew up his ACL the first or second drive.
You can't say he lost the first 4 minutes of the playoff game.
No, you can't, not that one. However, the one against the Jets where the Jets came in and they beat up them pretty good, especially Palmer. But, yeah, so the Panthers are going to the Super Bowl. They won, what was his final score, like 49?
No, it's 41, sort of linebacker 10, fractured something. His
Thomas Davis.
Forearm, but the reporter says he's going to play. I don't know if he's a doctor to report.
Thomas
or
Davis.
Or a magician or a soothsayer. How does he know these things?
Thomas Davis for the...
Journalist.
Thomas Davis for the Panthers broke his arm during the game. I think his wife, the following day, tweeted out that he was in surgery to repair it. And according to everything, he will be playing, or he has plans to play. Right. Will he pass?
Well, maybe call JPP and see what kind of pipe arm cast they can build for him.
Well, look, if Jack Youngblood, he played Super Bowl 17, 16 for the Rams against the Steelers.
Right.
He played with a broken leg. So it's not as if it's some sort of anomaly or there's no way that could happen. It happened once.
Well, I'm glad to see the NFL cares about the health of the players.
But again, like, this is what I always talk about. At a certain point, they're going to be like, no, I am doing this. I don't care what you say.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, really? Do you want to stand up to the 6'3" middle linebacker and be like, I need you to sit in the locker room?
Look,
well,
politely.
What I am doing is I'm making sure the backup's ready.
Well, that too. Yeah. And then Jared Allen, who did not play in this game, defensive end for the Panthers. Very good one.
Right.
He had a broken bone in his foot. And he was all ready to play, but he got scratched the day before.
But he'll play in the Super Bowl?
That's what he's talking about. Now he's got 3 weeks to rest because he didn't play last week. They've got this week, and then they've got the rest of next week leading up to Sunday. So he's planning on playing. So it wouldn't surprise me if Davis plays.
If you're not in the hospital, you dress up.
All hands on deck.
What are you waiting for?
It's the Super Bowl. That's what they say.
Right.
But, yeah.
I mean, T.O. did it. He even signed paperwork.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's definitely possible.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. So the Panthers, I mean, Cam Newton's there. You know, it's going to be interesting Super Bowl, but we'll preview that next week. Mm. Don't want to go into that too deeply.
How about some tennis talk? Anything going on with this investigation?
Well, everyone's still really on tenterhooks with it. A doubles team got talked to by the integrity unit at the Australian Open.
I thought something came out with Djokovic.
Djokovic has said he knows nothing about it.
But like, no,
smart man.
Because he admitted he was offered like $200,000 like a couple years ago. But there was something just recently while in Australia that people were kind of like, "Whoa, wait a minute!"
I think because the price was low, or
I think a South African tennis player had come out and been like, "Yeah, it's an open secret that everyone knows this."
Oh, that was
on.
It. There you go.
But focusing more on the top 50 players.
Yeah, because it's the smaller players.
Because there's ones I might know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've heard that
248 probably
isn't
going
to ring
the bells. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So that's tennis. We'll go to baseball real quickly. And the Mets signed Yoannis Cespedes the day before.
They have him on a short leash, though.
It's a three-year contract with the opt-out after the first year. He decided to come back for more money, about the same money annually, but the Nationals had offered him a five-year contract, and they had offered him pretty much out of a way to go back to the Mets, Because, you know, playing in New York, it's a big part of it. Because you can make a lot of money as in endorsements in New York City. You know, we talked about Madison Avenue. It's a real thing. It's true. But, you know, one of the things that people talked about was he would go for maybe a short contract, like a one-year contract this year, a lot of money, and then try the free agent market next year when nobody, like, he would be right now the biggest name if he opts out after. And the Mets, if he opts out, okay, we paid you for 1 year. We don't have to worry about you later on.
Well, the bigger part of the story, I think, is not only they get him, but Washington doesn't get him.
Right. Now, Washington didn't.
They couldn't sign anybody this year.
No. And they've.
Now, what is that? A managerial change? Why wouldn't players want to go there?
I think because, well, first of all, if Cespedes had gone to the Nationals, it would have improved their standing. But the Mets have something that no team in the NL East has.
And four great pitchers.
Five. Five, if you really... Like, we don't know what Wheeler's going to look like when he comes back in July.
Right.
But seriously, I mean, they definitely four. And you can't pick. And the best thing is, for a Met fan, is you can't pick which one is the best of those four. Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Mats. You can't say which one is the best. People
are really hot on Syndergaard.
I like Syndergaard, and they're hot for him and other reasons. But I like Syndergaard, but, you know, Harvey's got this grit that nobody has. DeGrom is naturally. But they're even talking about Mats. He's been a rookie for. He's played one season.
Well, he's a lefty.
He's a lefty, but they're talking like he's better than any of them. Like, yeah, people have seemed like, did you
what
take
agent
you guys
were you
guy?
Talking to?
I don't know. I'm just saying. And again, when we look at. So. To look at that and say, well, I could go to this team and have to face those four pitchers because they're in my division.
Right.
Or I could play on that team and automatically the Mets become favorite to return to the World Series. Yes, they have to deal with the Cubs, but the Cubs are mainly offense right now.
And they're the Cubs.
That's a very dangerous offense. But here's what worries me. I wouldn't call myself superstitious, but I notice the way things sort of play out. You know how they say you can't script this? Hollywood would reject that idea.
But you have a feel for it.
I have a feel. In sitting here at my kitchen table, I have a feel.
I will proudly proclaim.
I will say that, you know, with the Red Sox, going back, if we're talking about curses, the way the Red Sox lost in 2003 to the Yankees, where it all fell apart, Pedro and all that stuff and Grady Little. Then to come back the following year and to be down in a hole.
Right.
3-1 and or 3-0, 3-0, and have to come back in this epic fashion to win. You have to overcome that. With the Mets having embarrassed the Cubs in 4 games in a sweep, culminating at home, with Daniel Murphy as this, who had a historic postseason against the Cubs, being the name of the GOAT that allegedly cursed the Cubs. So then to come back the following year, if the Mets and the Cubs were to meet up in the National League Championship Series, I would be pretty certain that the Cubs would win that.
Really?
I would. Look, this is...
We have little faith.
Well, it's not little faith. It's just one of those things you look at and be like, there's something to this.
Well, the Mets could get better.
They could. I don't. Look, I'm saying this on January 26th.
But will Cespedes, will he play every day? You know, give an effort.
I think so.
That's what I'm concerned about.
I think so, but if he doesn't want
to. Because he reminds me of maybe an excellent race driver or whatever that falls asleep at the wheel from time to time.
Well, he didn't do well in the postseason. He might be the Carson Palmer of baseball. He'll great regular season. Wow, that postseason's not too good.
Yeah,
well,
it almost seemed like he had done his work.
Yeah. If he wants to take a day off, it's not as if they don't have anybody else. They're not as good as Cespedes, but they signed Alejandro Deaza as a lefty batter to play the outfield.
What do we know about him?
Contact hitter, good with the glove.
Okay.
But he's a lefty, so when Juan Lagares, who's a Gold Glove center fielder who has not been too good with the bat these last season.
And he stopped crashing into the wall, too.
Well, that, too.
Tells me he finally got a decent contract.
So that, along with Michael Conforto, who's a young up-and-comer player for the Mets, and
Conforto, yeah.
Conforto's very good. Conforto's very good. And Granderson, who's older, but he's still very solid. That's four outfielders right there. You add Cespedes, that's five outfielders.
That's enough.
So that's enough. And Cespedes, you know, okay, I'm not playing it. All right, let's put this guy.
Cespedes now is the highest paid outfielder in the history of the world.
$27 million this year.
For an outfielder.
Yes. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
A lot's expected.
Exactly. So 1 year guaranteed. If he wants to come back for the next for the following 2 years, he can.
And then after that, he'll be 33 years old, and how are you going to get a long-term contract?
Well,
then?
I don't know.
So something tells me he's leaving.
Probably.
I'm just going to earmark this episode for, like,
I think
championship game, end of the season, Chad's prediction, Mets, Cubs.
I wish you would. I wish you would. I wouldn't be surprised. And it's not like I'm the only one who's saying that. That's true. The other thing. So that's baseball. And there was not really any other baseball news. Justin Upton signs with the Tigers. The Tigers owner, Mike Ilitch, who's of he owns Little Caesars Pizza franchises.
I've never been there.
I think I was there once. But he
was buying all this pizza.
He's a former minor league baseball player. So he takes pride in owning the Tigers, and
right.
he views it as, well, we have this money, let's use it. Mm. So,
and they don't have to pay Cespedes.
No. Now they get to pay Upton, who's not as good as Cespedes statistically, but he's solid all around. So good for the Tigers. I always like to see the Tigers succeed. Something's good got to come out.
I enjoyed just seeing Cespedes throw the ball back underhand from the outfield.
He throws it. It's amazing. I mean, from the warning track, and it reaches second base.
He's a five-tool player.
He's unbelievable. But, yeah, he's got a bit of a head case. Moving over to basketball, it just came out earlier today when this was recorded that the Clippers star Blake Griffin got into a fight with a former equipment staff member from the Clippers. Apparently, he's not
the
on
equipment staff. They blow up the balls, or what is it? What is the assistant?
Apparently, they were out. They were out at what do you want to call it? A club, a restaurant. Oh, it's a restaurant. So apparently, the altercation started in a restaurant, and he punched the equipment staffer, and he. Did Blake Griffin break his hand?
That's pretty embarrassing.
So it's very embarrassing. He's out 4 to 6 weeks for getting into a fight. And the Clippers, who are in the Western Conference, which is right. very difficult with the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Thunder.
That's enough.
Yeah, are pretty much, they're not going to see it pass the first or second round.
I wonder what this
round.
Was about, the altercation.
Well, he was a former equipment staff member, and people are alleging that it's because the Clippers did not perform very well against the Toronto Raptors, and the equipment manager sort of got on him about it, and if they're at a restaurant, maybe some drinks were imbibed. And
bets. Geno Smith owed him money. No, Geno Smith owed Blake Griffin money, Blake Griffin
wanted that guy to fly out to a charity event, the equipment staff member, and it didn't happen, and so he said, give me my money. No. Well, I'm sure it's going to come out, the specifics of the event, but yeah, so Blake Griffin out. And in the first matchup between the Warriors and the Spurs, who have the two best records in basketball this year, the Warriors beat the Spurs, which was very surprising to a lot of people. And so now the Spurs... You know, everybody was pretty sure that the Warriors couldn't hang with them, and now looks like the Warriors could. Mm. But we'll see how that plays out in the postseason for those. And not much else aside from that. Anything else?
Mike Piazza.
Mike Piazza, that's right. I almost forgot.
How big is that?
Mike Piazza will retire his number, or the Mets will retire Mike Piazza's number 31 in July. Which to me, it's something I've always wanted them to do, is retire. Just, I'm not looking to compete with other franchises like the Yankees or the Cardinals that
well, you had a very late start if you're doing that.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have many, especially the Yankees are,
no single digits left.
No. Well, after, yeah, once, yeah, cause Jeter is retired and they're going to retire that number. And Joe Torre, their manager of all those years, well, wore the number 6. So 1 through 9 is now off the boards for the Yankees. So, I mean, just to show you how many, and they still have other numbers that they retired, 44 and you know, on and on and on. So not to compete with them, but I had always wished that the Mets, like, can somebody else get up there? Because it's Tom Seaver, Gil Hodges, and Casey Stengel, and that was it.
Well, the rest have too many felony convictions. Otherwise, also, there'd be a couple others up there.
Well, had they extended their careers, players like Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden, I always thought they should have retired Gary Carter's number
eight.
What
about Keith Hernandez? I guess he beat the federal probe because they're...
Let's
talk about him because he changed the attitude and direction. And
he, of course.
I never saw him as a Met.
No, but well, for you, you remember life before Keith Hernandez. I do not. I was born afterwards. So, but even as a fan of the franchise and a fan of his as a commentator for the Mets, I don't think his number should have been retired. Same thing with Gooden and Strawberry. They're just Carter, I can understand, because part of the reason is what I always thought was the Mets front office figuring out to retire a number. The player should be a Hall of Famer or elected to the Hall of Fame. Well, Gary Carter was elected to the Hall of Fame. He didn't go in with a Mets cap. In fact, he wanted to go in with a Mets cap, but the Baseball Hall of Fame directors had a rule about that, so that they got to pick. The player had input, but they had final say, did the Hall. And he went in as an expo.
For him, the whole franchise would be forgettable.
True. Yeah. So... but I thought they should have at least, and then Carter died of brain cancer not long after. So I thought that, yeah, he should have been, his number should have been retired, but it wasn't. So I'm just happy.
He was eight, wasn't he?
Eight.
So you'd be thinking Yogi Berra when you think eight in New York.
Mm. That is true. And that's kind of the reason why he took the number. I also, with them retiring the number 31, that was also John Franco's number, who's the all-time saves leader by a left-hander. And he was the captain of the Mets.
The most called strikes with balls in the dirt.
Pretty much. He was able to throw a...
as soon as Fox put up that...
The strike
electronic
zone.
Electronic strike zone.
Yeah.
His days were numbered.
Yeah, exactly. And they're trying to actually drop the strike zone. Raise the strike zone. You had showed me an article.
Yeah, from the cup of the knee to the top of the knee, or what is that? Well, two inches. I mean.
Well, yeah, but it brings up the bottom of the strike zone.
Umps don't want to bend over that far.
Well, no,
what's
because
what's going on there?
Well, but people always complain about the low strike. So now, if you raise the strike zone, even if it's
get more line drives,
maybe
it's got to favor offense.
Oh, of course, everything favors offense. Especially if you shrink the strike zone, because they don't call the high strikes either. They've only been calling the low strikes. So unless you raise the strike zone...
Did I say offense? Defense has the ball in baseball.
Well, yes, defense has the ball. Offense is to hit the ball. But the point being is that the offense...
Be more hittable.
Yes, because when you shrink the strike zone, it's better for hitters, because then they can take walks.
Right.
You know, then pitchers will have to throw over the plate.
Well, why don't they crouch more then?
Because
like Pete Rose did.
Wow. They don't make them like they used to.
There's only a few things Pete Rose did that you should mimic, and that was one of them.
That's right. Oh, also I wanted to talk about very quickly is the relocation of the Chargers to L.A. has kind of hit a snag because the Rams owner, Stan Kroenke, originally said that they would go in sort of partners, that everything in the stadium would be 50-50, concessions, advertising, all the naming rights, 50-50. However, all of the income from the surrounding development that he owns, the land, the buildings, and all that stuff, the Rams owner, Stan Kroenke, gets that. So the owner of the Chargers, Dean Spanos, viewed this as so I would be a tenant?
Well, he's abrasive.
He's very much so. He's burned all the bridges back to San Diego. And he doesn't want to hide his tail between his legs.
I think people in the East care what happens.
No, but it's interesting to see that, you know, three franchises, technically now two, the Raiders and Chargers, are in limbo because Stan Kroenke basically showed the
many,
NFL.
Many millions slash whatever, and they still can't get along.
No. Well, that's because the owner of the Raiders, Mark Davis, and the owner of the Chargers, Dean Spanos, are... in terms of NFL owners, are poor. Obviously, they still have millions of dollars. They're millionaires.
It's a relative term, yeah.
Right, but they are not... They own an NFL franchise, but Jerry Jones owns an NFL franchise, and he's worth $1 billion.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the Rooneys in Pittsburgh are billionaires as well. So, Tish Mara ownership of the Giants. Arthur Blank, I mean, all of these owners. The guy for the Jaguars, Khan, forget his name. It's something or other.
I feel like we should be talking about him every week because of the London franchise.
Oh, yeah, the London, yeah, partially London franchise Jaguars. So, yeah, relatively speaking, in terms of owners in the NFL, so they are
the business end of football.
Yes, because all those other owners, they made their money outside
of
football.
Only the fans out there care.
Well, yes, of course. But I find it interesting that now the talk is if the Chargers do go to L.A., right, the Raiders will then possibly go to San Diego.
I would like that.
Because it has, no matter where the Raiders go, because they're also talking about going to San Antonio, which has the Alamo Dome, which the Spurs used to play in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that.
But that stadium's only used like once or twice a year for college football. Yeah. And then
do they want a stadium on the cheap?
Well, Mark Davis doesn't want to build a stadium. Most of these cities are wise to it and say, we're not going to build you a stadium. So there's a ready-made stadium down in San Antonio that's older, but it's not. It's like an old car that's been kept in the garage. Like, yeah, it's older, but it's still in good condition. And then you have...
Still runs good.
That's right. You have San Diego, which has an older stadium, but they're talking about moving from Oakland, which... I mean, that stadium is decrepit, and the sewer tank was coming into the opposing locker room. So
by
anything,
design?
No, unfortunately, I think it also seeped into there.
The crap used to be on the other side of the field. Now they have a quarterback.
That's right. So when you have the option of do we stay in the cesspool, or in a very poor city, or do we go to
But the Rams complicated it caused.
Of course, yes, of course. Well, they never should have moved in the first place. It's funny because they talked about how Georgia, what was her name?
Fontaine.
She was a Californian who moved the Rams to St. Louis, to Missouri.
Right.
And then was bought by a Missourian, Stan Kroenke, who wants to move it to California.
Right.
So it's very interesting that way. So but for the Raiders, it doesn't matter where they go. They travel great. They're like the Cowboys. They're like the Steelers. They have fans nationwide.
Right.
So it doesn't matter where the Raiders go. The Chargers, they're...
Well, they're rebels to begin with.
So. Who, the Raiders? Yeah. So now, I know it's
so
been talked...
to see them homeless is not a surprise.
It's been talked about that the LAPD doesn't want the Raiders to come back.
No, I'm sure that...
Because then you have straight out
of
Compton, too.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It's unfortunate to say, but it is kind of the truth. So.
Right.
But it doesn't matter where they go. They go to San Antonio, there's a fan base. They could be the... If they go there, there's the third football team in the state of Texas. It doesn't matter. They'd still be popular. And if they go to San Diego, it doesn't matter. They'd still be popular because Raider fans travel. Chargers, you belong in San Diego. You go to L.A., you're going to get swallowed up by the Rams.
They'll keep the same helmets?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It says Raiders, and then the Chargers just have the bolt, so it doesn't matter which. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining me on this episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And next week we'll be previewing the Super Bowl and whatever else comes up in this world of sports. So thanks very much. Take care, and we'll see you later. Andrew, please take it away.
This has been another episode of Everyman Sports. The show's music is Cold Funk by Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under CC Attribution 3.0. Everyman Sports can be found on Facebook.com, where you can like it to receive updates and news. Visit Everyman Sports in the iTunes Store to leave a review of the show. Also, visit everymansports.podbean.com directly to comment and support. Everyman Sports can be contacted directly at everymansports@gmail.com.